Hi everyone, welcome to Housefeld's collective cast, and today I'm joined by Nicola Boyle from Housefeld and also by Tom Clark and Lisa Webb, part of the in-house legal team at Which, and Which of course are bringing their claim against Qualcomm on behalf of around 30 million consumers, UK consumers of smartphones, and Which was recently successful in their application for a collective proceedings order by virtue of a judgment that was handed down earlier this month. So Tom, Lisa, can you explain a little bit more about the claim that Which is bringing against Qualcomm? But also, I think it'd be great if you could explain also a bit about why Which is bringing this claim.
Hi, Lucy, thanks for having us. I think, first things, it's probably worth remembering that Which is a charity, because sometimes we can be thought of as those guys that tell you which washing machines to buy, which is fine because we do that, but we also do some other stuff too, and people can forget sometimes that our work and our reach extends much further than that, because we do exist to benefit consumers in line with our charitable objects, and as a result we've got a role to play in protecting consumers from actions, for example, by organisations that could adversely affect their rights. So as a result, our interests lie in sort of the wider consumer benefit, meaning that if we bring a case, we're not doing it as a self-interested party, we're doing it to represent the public interest. So I think it's quite important to get that out of the gates at the start. In terms of this particular case, we were looking, or are looking, at an abuse of dominance potentially. It's a standalone claim. Like you said, we've got 30 million potential members in the class, and those people are people who purchased or owned various different Apple and Samsung smartphones since 2015. And we've been looking at it because, you know, there's lots of litigation and regulatory investigations elsewhere in the world. But also, this is something that is so important for consumers generally. The regime, it's not just about this one case. It's the regime as a whole. We've been campaigning for the introduction of opt-out collective redress for consumers for such a long time. And even now, we're years after the introduction of it in the Consumer Rights Act. And despite that, we still haven't had a claim get all the way to trial. So it feels like there is an access to justice issue here that needs addressing. And also, I completely appreciate the irony of a lawyer on a call with a bunch of lawyers telling them not to think so much like lawyers. But I think it is sometimes worth remembering things from a consumer perspective, because if we're really used to dealing with courts and lawyers, we sometimes forget actually how daunting and intimidating and baffling, and I mean, we never forget how expensive it is, but for an individual, how expensive litigation can be, because if we deal with it on a daily basis, we'll forget what it's like for normal members of the public. And so because it is such an absolute mission for an individual to do these sorts of things on their own, that's why someone like Which needs to step up and bring claims on behalf of masses, so that they don't have to go and take on massive global multi-billion dollar multinationals on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, maybe this is something we can come back to, but of course, the regime as it stands at the moment only applies to breaches of competition law, which of course Which is alleging that Qualcomm has committed, but for consumer law breaches, for example, data protection breaches, environmental law, the opt-out regime it doesn't exist. But as I said, let's come back to that at the end. Stick to Qualcomm for the time being. So as I said, you, Lisa and Tom, were successful at certification. The judgment came down earlier this month. Can you talk to us a little bit about the points that were at issue for certification purposes?
Sure. Lisa, shall I take this one?
Yeah, go for it.
The points that were at issue during the CPO hearing were sort of three key issues where we were challenged by Qualcomm. The first one was in relation to the experts' methodology, where the methodology that had been put forward by our expert was being criticised by Qualcomm as not being able to demonstrate causation, so not being able to demonstrate that the overcharge that is alleged is passed on to the end consumers who purchase the smartphones, whether that's outright or through a contract. The second issue was that Qualcomm was alleging that the costs of bringing the claim outweighed the benefit to consumers of us pursuing the claim. And we'll spend some time talking about that, because obviously, as Lisa has already mentioned, you know, that for us is an access to justice issue, and we're very interested in trying to extend access to justice for consumers. So we'll certainly come back to that. And the third point was a more narrow one in relation to the insurance arrangements that we have in place for the claim. In particular, an allegation that we should be required to go out and seek additional insurance cover to the ATE cover that we already had in place, which we said was unnecessary. And I'm sure we'll come on to more detail, but the tribunal unanimously found in our favour on all three of those issues.
Great. Thanks very much, Tom. I mean, the cost benefit point is a really interesting one, particularly from your point of view as which. Do you want to, can we kick off with talking about that in a bit more detail? Because, I mean, Qualcomm's assertion in a nutshell was that, as you say, that the benefits of which bringing this claim, and it's a claim that's worth almost 500 million pounds to nearly 30 million consumers, but notwithstanding that, Qualcomm was saying that the benefits of bringing the claim are outweighed by the costs of doing so. Can you just unpick the way that the tribunal came at that in the judgment, I suppose, and also which is point of view on that assertion?
So I can talk a little bit about this. I think, if I'm honest, it felt, that argument that was raised felt a little bit jaded. It was trying to allege that a consumer organisation was doing something that perhaps wasn't in the best interests of consumers. Just felt like a bit of a non-argument in the first place. But there's a little bit of a naivety, I think, from large corporates or very affluent individuals even, who think that what might be a small sum to them isn't significant to the rest of the population. And for anyone who follows which or knows which or hears which in the news, we're forever banging on about how small sums are really, really relevant and are always adding up, particularly at the moment. There's a cost of living crisis. The cost of fuel is increasing. The cost of energy is constantly going up. And people are struggling with everyday bills. So for a multi-billion dollar corporation to say, well, you know, £17-16 isn't a significant sum, like I said, that's really naive to think that, because to a lot of people that is a huge amount of money. We put forward some information to the tribunal actually in relation to what £14 meant, and the reason we chose £14 is actually because there's some statistics out there that suggests that over 50% of the adult working population in the UK work for £14 or less an hour, and so it's obvious how significant that sum is to an individual. So more than that is even more significant, obviously. And I think if you're suggesting that people aren't going to come forward and claim, or you're suggesting that people won't find that sum helpful or relevant to them, then we strongly argue against that. We genuinely think people will care about this sum and it will make a difference to them and it will matter. And it was great because in the judgment, the tribunal actually really acknowledged this. They said that there was absolutely no evidence to suggest that a sum of £16 or £17 was too low for people to, you know, prick up their ears and pay attention to it. So it was great that the tribunal actually acknowledged what Which has been saying for such a long time, that these sums that might seem small to large organisations are actually really significant to individual consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, another point, I think, similar on a related note that came out in the judgment is that the tribunal was saying, well, people are going to remember buying a smartphone. It's a, you know, it's a significant purchase. You're likely to have receipts or other documentation, which I think, you know, added to the argument in terms of, because this of course relates to the take-up rate, the eventual take-up rate of the aggregate damages if Which is successful in the claim. Just on a related note, I mean, so as we've said, Qualcomm were criticizing the costs relative to the benefits, but they were at the same time arguing that Which should incur further costs in the form of purchasing an anti-avoidance endorsement, colloquially referred to as an AAE, for Which's insurance policies. And I think what the tribunal said on that is was quite interesting. Nicola, do you want to say a bit about that?
Yeah, and I think Lucy, it's quite a technical point, but what we were saying is that Which has already got insurance which covers the costs of Qualcomm, mm-hmm. and so they were focused very much on some very narrow exclusions and the circumstances in which they would apply. But this is part of perversely, slightly given the cost benefit analysis, an argument that Which should spend even more costs on the proceedings. And I think in dismissing that argument, the tribunal was taking quite a pragmatic approach and saying the insurance policies there were fit for the purpose and met the rules of the regime. But I think this is quite an important point when we're looking at the claims that can be brought, because the more defendants drive costs up, it makes some of those smaller claims, which are still very meaningful to consumers, much more difficult to bring under the regime.
And yeah. I think that goes to the access to justice point as well, doesn't it? Because the more expensive these claims are in the initial period, in the run-up to it, the harder they will be to bring. And effectively, I think some defendants might be attempting to dissuade people from bringing these claims, and that will have an ongoing impact on access to justice for consumers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so Tom, I think you mentioned the methodology point as well, and I'm loath to ask you to go into the finer details of which is experts' hedonic regression model right now. But do you want to just summarise at a very high level what the point was there and what the tribunal said in reply to Qualcomm's arguments?
I'll certainly do my best, Lucy, although I have to put my hand up and say I am no economist. But following along with the arguments, you know, during the hearing and actually reading the judgment, which, you know, it looks like it's certainly had some influence or some help from Professor Robin Mason, who's the expert economist on the tribunal. And that provides a really useful and concise and digestible explanation of what the issues were and where the tribunal came out on them. But, you know, in short, as sort of flagged earlier, the criticism that was being levelled at the methodology that our expert economists had put forward was that it would be able to demonstrate correlation, i.e. higher royalties and higher handset prices, but not causation. So handset prices going up due to higher royalties. And interestingly, during the 2.5 days of the hearing, a significant portion of that was dedicated to the hot tub, where both our expert economist and the expert economist for Qualcomm were questioned together, you know, for some time by the tribunal on the methodology and what it may or may not be able to achieve. But ultimately, along with the point about it being able to demonstrate correlation and not causation, the other criticism levelled at the methodology was that it didn't take into account facts, and that was necessary in order to have a defensible methodology capable of assessing class-wide loss. I mean, ultimately, mm-hmm. the tribunal paid short shrift to that in the judgment and said that it clearly did take into account facts, and our expert was clearly open to taking account of facts that were relevant to the methodology, and did conclude that a hedonic regression is capable of evidencing causation. So while that's a high-level trip through that issue, it certainly obviously came out in our favour, and also, as I said, there's some really useful explanation of the methodology in the tribunal's decision.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think sort of looking more broadly at the approach the tribunal takes at certification, it has to be right that there is a line drawn, frankly, on the detail that you get into for certification.
And I think the other reason the judgment's important, though, from a consumer perspective, is that quite often there are it isn't sort of a defendant that's sold directly to the consumer, but there will be these different layers in the supply chain. And so I think it's quite important that the tribunal is, open to understanding that we have to find a methodology that works in that situation. Mm-hmm. And as in Merrick's, they said, they have to find the most sensible way of approximating the damage in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. So it hopefully opens the door to some of those claims. Whether harm is indirect.
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that, Nicola. I mean, the other thing as well that we saw when the tribunal was stepping through the issues that were levelled at our methodology in the judgment is the tribunal regularly saying, this is an issue for trial, this is an issue for trial, this is an issue for trial. Mm-hmm. And, I think it was useful to see the tribunal do that and try and demarcate the issues for a CPO hearing and the issues that, are then going to need to be addressed further down the line. Because I think the more clarity there is about what is the test and what are the issues that are going to be relevant at the CPO stage and what ones are going to be relevant later, the more clarity there will be for other, prospective class reps thinking about, how they are going to bring a claim, and hopefully that will increase the speed and reduce costs over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And overall, obviously the claim has been certified, as you say, Tom, it's obviously positive for the consumers that are in the class that you're representing in this case, but there are clearly some benefits as well that may apply to other claims and other class representatives going forwards as well. Just to draw things to a close, Lisa, at the outset, you mentioned the fact that the regime was introduced in October 2015. We still haven't seen the conclusion of any claims, including via settlements. Do you think that, this is maybe potentially an unfair question, can you see more and more claims being brought? Is that the direction of the regime? Do you think that the regime will be expanded? I mentioned consumer law, but there are obviously other areas of law that would benefit from a generic regime.
So it's not an unfair question, and I can tell you exactly which ones to see. It is still a young regime, relatively, and like you say, we haven't seen any conclusion, so we don't really know the direction this is going in yet. What we know so far is that from sort of certification stage, it does seem to be going in the right direction, and it seems to be working so far. But I'm sort of loath to say this is all great, because we don't know yet.
In terms of more cases, it certainly seems to be picking up pace. It does seem that there's a lot more claims out there. And I think all bar one have now been certified that have attempted. So it's definitely getting that way. I think we would love, which when I say we, I mean which, would love to see the regime being broadened out and the technique and the way that claims are brought within the regime to be expanded to, like you say, consumer claims. You know, data protection claims at the moment are a total nightmare for everyone. I think there's scope for it being broader use in environmental claims as well. So it's certainly where we can make it easier for people to do this, to get the access to the justice. And I know I've said it so many times, I sound like a broken record, but access to justice has to be a key component here. And if we can broaden it out and make it work for everyone, then that can only be a good thing, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got two people here at Housefeld that certainly agree with that. Tom, did you want to make any concluding points?
Well, I think I'd echo certainly what Lisa was saying about where we would like to see the expansion of the regime in future. And indeed, you know, what we have seen to date is positive. But as Lisa says, you know, we are still holding our breath to see, you know, the first judgment or settlement, and you know, we look forward to that happening, and I guess that then demonstrating that, you know, we do have a regime that works, and that is able to deliver outcomes for consumers that are, you know, positive ones. You know, so we're certainly, you know, waiting to see that, and obviously that is what we are seeking to do with our Qualcomm claim, and we will, you know, continue to be interested in this space because, you know, we think it is a good way of delivering direct redress to the consumers that, you know, we exist for. So, you know, as Lisa said, mixed sort of messages in that positive, but it has been slow. You know, let's see what happens in the future, and we'll obviously be involved with this claim.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thank you very much, both. That's been great to hear your thoughts on the judgment and also how the regime is developing more broadly. So thank you very much for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.